time to enlighten up and health yourself at the same time. It's Natural Solutions Radio with Sir Eliezer Ben Joseph, traditional naturopath.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining me here on this Christmas weekend. Today, I've put together a bunch of stories or poems, and some of them are really touching. This first one is the true story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. A man named Bob May, depressed and brokenhearted, stared at his drafty apartment window into the chilling December night. His 4-year-old daughter, Barbara, sat on his lap, quietly sobbing. Bob's wife, Evelyn, was dying of cancer. Little Barbara couldn't understand why her mommy could never come home. Barbara looked up into her dad's eyes and asked, "Why isn't mommy just like everybody else's mommy?" Bob's jaw tightened and his eyes welled with tears. Her question brought waves of grief, but also of anger. It had been the story of Bob's life. Life always had to be different for Bob. Small when he was a kid, Bob was often bullied by other boys. He was too little at the time to compete in sports. He was often called names he'd rather not remember. From childhood, Bob was different and never seemed to fit in. Bob did complete college, married his loving wife, and was grateful to get his job as a copywriter to Montgomery Ward during the Great Depression. Then he was blessed with a little girl. But it was all short-lived. Evelyn's bout with cancer stripped them of all their savings, and now Bob and his daughter were forced to live in a 2-room apartment in the Chicago slums. Evelyn died just days before Christmas in 1938. Bob struggled to give hope to his child, for whom he couldn't even afford to buy a Christmas gift. But if he couldn't buy a gift, he was determined to make one, a storybook. Bob had created a character in his own mind and told the animal story to little Barbara just to give her comfort and hope. Again and again, Bob told the story, embellishing it more with each telling. Who was the character? What was the story all about? The story Bob May created was his own autobiography in fable form. The character he created was a misfit outcast like he was. The name of the character, a little reindeer named Rudolph, with a big shiny nose. Bob finished the book just in time to give it to his little girl on Christmas Day. But the story doesn't end there. The general manager of Montgomery Ward caught wind of the little storybook and offered Bob May a nominal fee to purchase the rights to print the book. Montgomery Ward went on to print Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and distribute it to children visiting Santa Claus in their stores. By 1946, Montgomery Ward had printed and distributed more than 6 million copies of Rudolph. That same year, a major publishing company wanted to purchase the rights from Ward's to print an updated version of the book. In an unprecedented gesture of kindness, the CEO of Montgomery Ward's returned all rights back to Bob May. The book became a bestseller, many toy and marketing deals followed, and Bob May, now remarried with a growing family, became a wealthy man from the story he created to comfort his grieving daughter. But the story doesn't end there either. Bob's brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, made a song adaptation to Rudolph. Though the song was turned down by such popular vocalists as Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore, it was recorded by the singing cowboy Gene Autry. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was released in 1949 and became a phenomenal success, selling more records than any other Christmas song with the exception of White Christmas from Bing Crosby. The gift of love that Bob May created for his daughter so long ago kept on returning back to bless him again and again, and Bob May learned the lesson, just like his dear friend Rudolph, that being different isn't so bad. In fact, being different can be a blessing. Now, this story I've not been able to confirm. The story supposedly comes from Albert Einstein when he was a student in college. The story is very good. Did God make everything there is? An unbelieving college professor once challenged one of his classes with the question, "Did God make everything there is?" One student bravely answered, "Yes." "Everything?" the young man. "Yes, he did, sir," the young man replied. Professor responded, "If God made everything, then God made evil. And if we can only create from within ourselves, then God is evil." The student didn't have a response, and the professor was happy to have once again proved the Christian faith to be a myth. Then another student raised his hand and asked, "May I ask you a question, sir?" "Yes, you may," responded the professor. The young man stood up and said, "Sir, is there such a thing as cold?" "Of course there is. What kind of question is that? Haven't you ever been cold?" The young man replied, "Actually, sir, cold does not exist. What we consider to be cold is really only the absence of heat. Absolute zero is when there is absolutely no heat. But cold does not really exist. We have only created that term to describe how we feel when heat is not there." The young man continued, "Sir, is there such a thing as dark?" Once again, the professor responded, "Of course there is." Once again, the student replied, "Actually, sir, darkness does not exist. Darkness is really only the absence of light. Darkness is only a term man developed to describe what happens when there is no light present." Then the young man asked, "Sir, is there such a thing as evil?" The professor responded, "Of course we have rapes, we have murders and violence everywhere in the world. Those things are evil." The student replied, "Actually, sir, evil does not exist. Evil is simply the absence of God. Evil is a term man developed to describe the absence of God. God did not create evil. It isn't like truth or love, which exists as qualities like heat and light. Evil is simply a state where God is not present, like cold without heat or darkness without light." The professor was silenced, and that young man was Albert Einstein. Time to think about things and think about goodness and kindness and joy and doing things in your life. This next one I received from a friend, and it's the seven wonders of the world. And a teacher asked her class of young students to list the seven wonders of the world. And the following were listed most often: Egypt's Great Pyramid, the Taj Mahal, the Grand Canyon, the Panama Canal, the Empire State Building, St. Peter's Basilica in England, China's Great Wall. But one little girl was slow in her list. The teacher asked her what she thought were the seven wonders of the world. Replied the little girl with some hesitation, "To touch, to taste, to see, to hear, and then to feel, to laugh, and to love." The greatest wonders are those we create from what life presents us. This next one, I have two poems about soldiers, but this one is called "The Soldier's Night Before Christmas." It was the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroomed house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give and to see just who in this home did live. I looked all around, a strange sight I did see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stocking by the mantel, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung some pictures of a far distant land. With medals and badges, awards of all kinds, a sober thought came through my mind. For this house was different. It was dark and dreary. I found the home of a soldier. Once I could see clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent and alone, curled up on the floor in this one-bedroomed home. The face was so gentle, the room in disorder, not how I pictured a true American soldier. Was this some hero of whom I just read, curled up on a poncho, the floor for a bed? I realized the families I saw earlier this night owed their lives to these soldiers who were willing to fight. Soon round the world the children would play, and grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. They all enjoyed freedom each month of the year because of the soldiers like the one lying here. I couldn't help wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in a land far from home. The very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knees and started to cry. The soldier awakened, and I heard a rough voice, "Santa, please don't cry, for this life is my choice. I fight for the freedom, and I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core." The soldier rolled over and drifted to sleep. I couldn't control it. I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, and we both did shiver from the cold night's chill. I did not want to leave on the cold and dark night this guardian of honor, so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over with a voice soft and pure, whispered, "Carry on, Santa. It's Christmas Day. All is secure." One look at my watch, and I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend, and to all a good night. This poem was written by a peacekeeping soldier stationed overseas. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph. We'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here at a Christmas edition. Things that I found that over the years have touched me deeply, and I've saved them. Okay, the second poem that I had was another story about soldiers, a poem called Daddy's Poem, and it was about a little girl and her daddy. Her hair was up in a ponytail, her favorite dress tied with a bow. Today was Daddy's Day at school, and she couldn't wait to go. But her mommy tried to tell her that she probably should stay home, why the kids might not understand if she went to school alone. But she was not afraid. She knew just what to say. "I want to tell her classmates of why he wasn't here today." But still her mother worried for her to face this day alone, and that was why, once again, she tried to keep her daughter home. But the little girl went to school, eager to tell them all about a dad she never sees, a dad who never calls. There were daddies along the wall at the back for everyone to meet, children squirming impatiently, anxious in their seats. One by one, the teacher called a student from the class to introduce their daddy as seconds slowly passed. At last the teacher called her name. Every child turned to stare. Each of them was searching, a man who wasn't there. "Where's her daddy at?" she heard a boy call out. "She probably doesn't have one," another student dared to shout. And from somewhere near the back she heard a daddy say, "Looks like another deadbeat dad, too busy to waste his day." The words did not offend her, and she smiled up at her mom and looked back at her teacher, who told her to go on. And with hands behind her back, slowly she began to speak, and out of the mouths of a child came words incredibly unique. "My daddy couldn't be here because he lives so far away, but I know he wishes he could be, since this is such a special day. And though you cannot meet him, I wanted you to know all about my daddy and how much he loves me so. He loved to tell me stories. He taught me to ride my bike. He surprised me with pink roses and taught me to fly a kite. We used to share fudge sundaes and ice cream in a cone. And though you cannot see him, I'm not standing here alone. 'Cause my daddy's always with me, even though we are apart. I know because he told me he'll forever be in my heart." With that, her little hand reached up and lay across her chest, feeling her own heartbeat beneath her favorite dress. And from somewhere here in the crowd of dads, her mother stood in tears, proudly watching her daughter, who was wise beyond her years. For she stood up for the love of a man not in her life, doing what was best for her, doing what was right. And when she dropped her hand back down, staring straight into the crowd, she finished with a voice so soft, but its message clear and loud. "I love my daddy very much. He's my shining star. And if he could be here, he'd be here, but heaven's just too far. You see, he's a British soldier, and he died just this past year when a roadside bomb hit his convoy and taught Britons to fear. But sometimes when I close my eyes, it's like he never went away." And then she closed her eyes and saw him that very day. And to her mother's amazement, she witnessed with surprise a room full of daddies and children all starting to close their eyes. Who knows what they saw before them? Who knows what they felt inside? Perhaps for merely a second they saw him at her side. "I know you're with me, Daddy. Not one in the room could explain it, for each of their eyes had been closed. But there on the desk beside her was a fragrant, long-stemmed rose. And a child was blessed, if only for a moment, by the love of her shining star, and given the gift of believing that heaven is never too far." This one I'm sure you've all heard before, because there's been so many postcards and Christmas cards that have had this. This one's called Footprints, and it's one of my favorites, and I love this. And the author is unknown. "One night a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from his life. For each scene, he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to him and the other belonging to the Lord. When the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life, there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened at this very lowest and saddest times in his life. This reality bothered him, and he questioned the Lord about it. 'Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there were only one set of footprints. I don't understand. Why, when I needed you, would you have left me?' The Lord replied, 'My precious, precious child, I love you, and I would never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you.'" Now, I know you've heard that one before. I read these stories not just for you, but I read them also for me. So I thank you very much. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, and we'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining me here at this special edition where I'm reading stories and poems, and the first one is called The Road to Heaven. A man and his dog were walking along the road. The man was enjoying the scenery when it suddenly occurred to him that he was dead. He remembered dying and that the dog had been dead for years. He wondered where the road was leading them. After a while, they came to a high, white stone wall along one side of the road. It looked like fine marble. At the top of the long wall, it was broken by a tall arch that glowed in the sunlight when he was standing before it. He saw a magnificent gate in the arch that looked like mother of pearl, and the streets that led to the gate looked like pure gold. He and his dog walked toward the gate, and as he got closer, he saw a man at a desk to one side. When he was close enough, he called out, "Excuse me, where are we?" "Well, this is heaven, sir," the man answered. "Wow! Would you happen to have some water?" the man asked. "Of course, sir. Come right in. I'll have some ice water brought right up to you." The man gestured, and the gate began to open. "Can my friend," gesturing toward his dog, "come in too?" the traveler asked. "I'm sorry, sir, but we don't accept pets." The man thought for a moment, then turned back toward the road and continued the way he had been going. After another long walk, and at the top of another long hill, he came to a dirt road which led through a farm gate that looked as if it had never been closed. There was no fence, and as he approached the gate, he saw a man inside, leaning against a tree and reading a book. "Excuse me," he called. "Do you have any water?" "Yeah, sure. There's a pump over there." The man pointed to a place that couldn't be seen from the outside the gate. "Come on in." "How about my friend here?" the traveler gestured to the dog. "Well, there should be a bowl by the pump." They went through the gate, and sure enough, there was an old-fashioned hand pump with a bowl beside it. The traveler filled the bowl and took a long drink himself. Then he gave some to the dog. When they were full, he and the dog walked back toward the man who was standing by the tree waiting for them. "Well, what do you call this place?" the traveler asked. "Well, this is heaven," was his answer. "Well, that's confusing," the traveler said. "The man down the road said that that was heaven also." "Oh, you mean the place with the gold street and the pearly gates?" "Nope, that's hell." "Well, doesn't it make you angry for them to use your name like that?" "Nah, I can see how you might think so, but we're just happy that they screen out the folks who'll leave their best friends behind." The next one I want to read was a very kind of funny and quite nice. I liked it. It was called "Ice Cream is God." Last week I took my children to a restaurant. My six-year-old son asked if he could say grace. As we bowed our heads, he said, "God is good, God is great. Thank you for the food. And I would thank you even more if Mom got us ice cream for dessert. And liberty and justice for all. Amen." What a cute prayer. Along with the laughter from the other customers nearby, I heard a woman remark, "That's what's wrong with this country. Kids today don't even know how to pray, asking for God for ice cream. Why, I never." Hearing this, my son burst into tears and asked me, "Did I do it wrong? Is God angry at me?" As I held him and assured him that he had done a terrific job and God was certainly not angry at him, an elderly gentleman approached the table. He winked at my son and said, "I happen to know that God thought it was a great prayer." "Really?" my son asked. "Cross my heart." Then in theatrical whisper, he added, indicating to the woman whose remark had started this whole thing, "Too bad she never asked God for ice cream. A little ice cream is good for the soul sometimes." Naturally, I bought my kid ice cream at the end of the meal. My son stared at his for a moment and then did something I will remember the rest of my life. He picked up his sundae and without a word walked over and placed it in front of the woman. With a big smile, he told her, "Here, this is for you. Ice cream is good for your soul sometimes, and my soul is good already." That is something to remember. And this next one, about a man and his mother. A man stopped at a flower shop to order some flowers to be wired to his mother, who lived 200 miles away. As he got out of the car, he noticed a young girl sitting on the curb sobbing. He asked her what was wrong, and she replied, "I wanted to buy a red rose for my mother, but I only have 75 cents, and the rose costs $2. The man smiled and said, "Come on in with me. I'll buy you a rose." He bought the little girl her rose and ordered his own mother's flowers. As they were leaving, he offered the girl a ride home. She said, "Yes, please. You can take me to my mother." She directed him to a cemetery, where she placed the rose on a freshly dug grave. The man returned to the flower shop, canceled the wire order, picked up a complete bouquet, and drove the 200 miles to his mother's house. Another story that can touch you so. This one is two choices. What would you do? You make the choice. Don't look for a punchline here. There isn't one. I want to read it anyway. And my question is, would you have made the same choice? At a fundraising dinner for a school that serves children with learning disabilities, the father of one of the students delivered a speech that would never be forgotten by all who attended. After extolling the school and its dedicated staff, he offered a question. When not interfered with by outside influences, everything nature does is done with perfection. Yet my son Shay cannot learn things as other children do. He cannot understand things as other children do. Where is the natural order of things in my son? The audience was stilled by the query. The father continued, "I believe that when a child like Shay, who was mentally and physically disabled, comes into the world, an opportunity to realize true human nature presents itself, when it comes in the way of other people and how they treat the child." Then he told the following story. Shay and I had walked past a park where some boys Shay knew were playing baseball. Shay asked, "Do you think they'll let me play?" I know that most of the boys would not want someone like Shay on their team, but as a father, I also understood that if my son were allowed to play, it would give him a much-needed sense of belonging and some confidence to be accepted by others in spite of his handicaps. I approached one of the boys on the field and asked, not expecting much, if Shay could play. The boy looked around for guidance and said, "Well, we're losing by 6 points, and the game is in the 8th inning. I guess he can be on our team, and we'll try to put him in to bat in the 9th inning." Shay struggled over the team's bench, and with a broad smile, put on a team shirt. I watched with a small tear in my eye and warmth in my heart. The boys saw my joy, my son being accepted. In the bottom of the 8th inning, Shay's team scored a few runs, but was still behind by 3 points. In the top of the 9th inning, Shay put on a glove and played in the right field. Even though no hits came his way, he was oblivious and obviously ecstatic that just to be on the game and on the field. grinning from ear to ear from the stands. I waved to him. In the bottom of the ninth inning, Shea's team scored again. Now, with two outs and the bases loaded, the potential winning run was on base, and Shea was scheduled to be the next at bat. At this juncture, do they let Shea bat and give away their chance to win the game? Surprisingly, Shea was given the bat. Everyone knew that a hit was all but impossible because Shea didn't even know how to hold the bat properly, much less connect with the ball. However, as Shea stepped up to the plate, the pitcher, recognizing that the other team was putting winning aside for this moment in Shea's life, he moved in a few steps to lob the ball in softly so Shea could at least make contact. Shea swung clumsily and missed. The pitcher again took a few steps forward to toss the ball softly toward Shea. As the pitch came in, Shea swung at the ball and hit a slow ground ball right back to the pitcher. The game would now be over. The pitcher picked up the soft grounder and could have easily thrown the ball to the first baseman. Shea would have been out, and that would have been the end of the game. Instead, the pitcher threw the ball right over the first baseman's head, out of the reach of all his teammates. Everyone from the stands and both teams started yelling, "Shea, run to first! Run to first!" Never in his life had Shea ever run that far, but he made it to first base. He scampered down the baseline wide-eyed and startled. Everyone yelled, "Run to second base! Run to second!" And catching his breath, Shea awkwardly ran toward second, gleaming and struggling to make it to the base. By the time Shea rounded towards second base, the right fielder had the ball, the smallest guy on their team, who now had his first chance to be the hero for his team. He could have thrown the ball to second baseman for the tag, but he understood the pitcher's intentions, so he too intentionally threw the ball high and far over the third baseman's head. Shea ran toward third base deliriously as the runners ahead of him circled and bases toward home. All were screaming, "Shea, Shea, Shea, all the way, Shea." So he reached third base. "Run to third." Shea ran to third. As Shea rounded third, the boys from both teams and the spectators were on their feet screaming, "Shea, run home, run home." Shea ran to home base. He stepped on the plate and was cheered as the hero who hit the grand slam and won the game for his team. "That day," said the father softly, with tears now rolling down his face, "the boys from both teams helped bring a piece of true love and humanity into the world." Shea didn't make it to another summer. He died that winter, having never forgotten being the hero and making me so happy, and coming home and seeing his mother tearfully embrace her little boy, the little hero of that day. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, and we'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs.
We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
And welcome back. Welcome back. Today's holiday special, Natural Solutions Radio. The paradox of our time in history: we have taller buildings, yet shorter tempers; wider freeways, yet narrower viewpoints. We spend more, yet have less. We buy more and enjoy it less. We have bigger houses and smaller families, more conveniences and less time. We have more degrees, yet less common sense, more knowledge, only less judgment. More experts and more problems, more medicine and less wellness. We drink too much, smoke too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry too quickly, stay up too late, get up too tired, read too seldom, watch TV too often, and pray too seldom. We have multiplied our possessions and reduced our values. We talk too much, love too seldom, and hate too often. We've learned how to make a living, only not a life. We've added years to life, not life to years. We've been all the way to the moon and back, yet have trouble crossing the street to meet the new neighbor. We've conquered outer space, yet not inner space. We've done larger things, yet not better things. We've cleaned up the air, yet polluted the soul. We've split the atom, yet not our own prejudices. We write more and learn less. We plan more and accomplish less. We've learned to rush and forget our patience. We build more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, and still we have less communication. These are the times of fast foods and slow digestion, tall men and short character, steep profits and shallow relationships. These are the times of make-believe world peace and domestic warfare, more leisure yet less fun, more kinds of food yet less nutrition. These are the days of two incomes and more divorce, of fancier houses and broken homes. These are the days of quick trips, disposable diapers, throwaway morality, one-night stands, overweight bodies, and pills that do everything from cheer you up to quiet you down to kill you slowly. It's time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room. It is for sure a moment in time to ponder. You might remember comedian Yakov Smirnoff. When he first came to the United States from Russia, he was not prepared for the variety of instant products available in American grocery stores. He says, "On my first shopping trip, I saw powdered milk. You just add water and you get milk. Then I saw powdered orange juice. You just add water and you get orange juice. Then I saw baby powder. And I thought to myself, what a country. We live in a fast-paced world. We drive fast cars. We eat fast food. We live in the fast lane. And we want it all now." One old story tells of a judge who was in a benevolent mood as he questioned the prisoner. "What are you charged with?" he asked. "Doing my Christmas shopping too early," replied the defendant. "Well, that's not an offense," said the judge. "How early were you doing the shopping?" "Well, Judge, before the store opened," countered the prisoner. For all of us, we'll go through those extremes to satisfy our desires to get it now. But we know what we want and what we wish we could have it yesterday. We don't like to wait, though there is certainly a place for decisiveness and action. There is also a place for patience. Have you learned when to wait? Wait for the sunrise. There will always be another day. Wait for guidance. Learn to be still. Wait for wisdom. It will come with experience. Wait for growth. It will come in the fullness of time. Wait and be counted. It is the secret to inner peace. There is a time to act, and there is also a time to wait. Learn how to tell what time it is, for great things can happen for those who learn to wait. This is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he said, "Adopt the pace of nature. Her secret is patience." I thank everybody, and we'll be back next week with another show. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph signing off, Natural Solutions Radio.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. about supplements for your specific health concerns and needs. Be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.